Hello and welcome, Microsoft Ignite. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, evening, morning, wherever you're coming from. We are super excited to get to talk to you today. And what we're going to be discussing is talking about how to defend against threats in Microsoft Teams. So we know threats come in many vectors and factors from documents, through apps, through identity. So we're going to be covering all of that. So my name is John Gruszczyk. I help work on anything Teams, security, compliance, privacy related. And with me is Brett. Brett, go ahead and give us a quick intro.
Hey, John. Yeah, I'm also on the Microsoft Teams product team, but I work with IT Pro Readiness around all of Teams, not just security and threats.
Cool. So Brett, why don't you go ahead and kick us off?
Oh, sounds great. So what we're going to do today is we are going to be walking you through one of our MS Learn modules, Defend Against Threat in Teams. You can see it here. It's a short module, but believe me, there's a lot of content and security, and we're going to take the whole 75 minutes. So what are we doing today? We are going to walk through this step by step, and then we're going to talk about interactive guides. We're going to do some demos on some brand new interactive guides, and then we're going to answer all kinds of questions that you guys have. So this is an interactive session. So we want to make sure that feel free to ask questions in the chat, and we will be addressing them during the session, not just at the end. So that'll keep it live. Prerequisite for defend against threats, you should have a familiarity with Microsoft Teams administration, but it's not necessary for this discussion, but it's good to have the knowledge. So when we say defend against threats in Teams, we actually have an overall arching learning module on MS Learn called Enforce Security, Privacy, and Compliance in Microsoft Teams. And you'll see here as these pop down, these are the actual individual modules. And this Defend Against Threats is right there in the middle. And we're also going to talk a little bit about some of the other content and some of the other modules. But if you want to follow along on this learning module, you can actually go to aka.ms/learn-team-security. Our learning objectives for this is basically an overview of Microsoft 365 and Team Security. John's going to walk us through that. We're going to talk about Microsoft Defender and Defender for Endpoints, talk about cloud app security and how security is implemented in the cloud, conditional access, a very important topic, and data loss prevention or DLP and how we actually use that for Teams. So let's kick this off. Let's get started.
All right. And we do see Lee here mention it's great. Don't have to travel anywhere, sitting in a comfy chair. Some of you might have some coffee, adult beverages, depending on where you are, or what time it is. And so that's the whole point is this is a fully live interaction. So you may see me glance or Brett glance off screen so we can answer your questions in our command centers here. But yeah, so let's go ahead and get started. And again, I encourage you to ask questions so we can engage with you and answer what you're asking about. First, I do want to set the kind of standard for how Teams garners its security and compliance, and that starts through Microsoft 365 at our top layer. So many of you may be familiar with some of our products with Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive that you're already managing, and that's part of our approach to security is having those easy management layers. So it starts with built-in experiences that work across platforms. The AI and automation that will help you be more proactive in defending against threats, which we'll talk about today. So, of course, we want to have those measures in place that are acting on behalf of your end users. But we also want to give you those artificial intelligence and kind of automation tools to help make your job easier. And then, of course, we need to make sure these are integrated across people, devices, apps, and data that span your entire environment, wherever those employees may be working. So we kind of take a integrated security approach here and focus on six pillars. And again, if you've been with Microsoft around for a while with Microsoft 365, you've seen these kind of six product areas be our focus for security and compliance. And it starts with identity and access management. So this is things like baked on Azure Active Directory, using it as our identity control plane. So we're able to automate and control things like enforcing multi-factor authentication or applying conditional access policies, which Brett and I will talk about in a little bit. Threat protection, which is the core of what we're doing. So this includes things like being able to defend against malicious documents that come through attachments or malicious URLs through email, right? Those are a good example of using automation and intelligence to be able to prevent those threat intrusions. Information protection and governments. This is another item we'll be talking about when we get into data loss prevention. But again, very important that we want to be able to control our data in our organization, make sure it's either protected or encrypted as needed, and that those protections go wherever that data or content goes. Cloud security is the last big topic that we'll actually be talking about today. We'll talk about how those cloud app security brokers are able to help you manage all of your apps, not just your Microsoft first party or other vendor solutions. And then in that risk management, discover, and response space, this really gets into the automated tooling. These are a little bit more compliance focused, and we're going to keep on those left four for today's session. So last thing I'll wrap up before we turn it over to Brett is just kind of the focus that we have on safeguarding security and compliance measures in Microsoft Teams. So of course, begins with privacy. Microsoft believes privacy is a fundamental human right, and that's how we design it into these services. Meeting and conferencing controls, we actually have a featured session that we'll be talking a little bit more about some of these. It includes things like giving meeting organizers controls to control who can directly join meetings, make sure you can prevent disruptions, hard mute, et cetera. But for what today's session is going to be focusing on is these bottom three here, or really bottom two. Identity and account protection measures, again, being able to integrate with Azure Active Directory and take advantage of that as our centralized identity provider and enforce things like conditional access, multi-factor authentication, document classification, all those great controls. And then how we protect that data against cybersecurity threats. And data includes any form of content that Teams is generating. And then lastly, just a quick mention, our support for 90 plus regulations and internal compliance. This is how we, again, layer up to Microsoft 365 being our overarching management layer. All right, Brett, that was a lot. So I'm going to kind of skip through this and hand it over back to you. But again, kind of some of the things we'll be covering today, multi-factor authentication, conditional access, and how we assign those risk-based policies, our integration with Endpoint Manager, and we'll talk about some guest access. And then on the data and defense space, we're going to talk about data loss prevention and some sensitivity labels. And Brett, I believe you're actually going to do some demos for us. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I have a couple demos lined up, more in the second half of this session, but they'll be interesting and enjoyable.
Awesome. And yeah, we'll kind of wrap it up with some identity prevention. And then, of course, we have things like private channels and other guest access. But to get into those, we'd love to hear some more questions and interaction. But Brett, I'm going to kick it over to you. So why don't you set the context for us on what Microsoft Defender for Endpoint is?
Great. So let's start off with Microsoft Defender for Endpoint. It's one of the tools of Microsoft 365 Defender. Microsoft 365 Defender is a suite of tools to enhance your security. We have Defender for Endpoint, Defender for Office 365, Defender for Identity, and then Microsoft Cloud App Security. And we're going to be taking a look at endpoint and cloud app security as we protect our endpoints from cyber threats and identify that malicious content. Now, this suite is available for Microsoft Teams and SharePoint and OneDrive. And we do want to make sure that you include SharePoint and OneDrive because they are the back end for Microsoft Teams content storage. So let's dig into Microsoft Defender for Endpoint. You can see that there are seven actual points of surface area, or how we attack it. We start with the first one being threat and vulnerability management. And this works in real time, and it improves that discovery and remediation of endpoint threats. We have the attack surface reduction. This is things like hardware isolation, application control, ransomware protection, and control foldered access. Our third one is next generation antivirus. That is our Windows Defender antivirus. Always on, always scanning and use the files and process behavior monitoring, including detecting and blocking apps that are deemed unsafe. But it might not be detected as malware in your other standard anti-malware tools. We have endpoint detection and response. This gives you a visual feedback. It provides security teams with that feedback to allow them to understand and react appropriately to these security breaches. Then we have, what do we got next here? We have automatic investigation and remediation. This approach allows organizations to provide that security at scale. That rather than having to duplicate those actions that security professionals would take, it actually automates it so that we can do this in a much more, a much easier way. And it's actually quicker to investigate those threats. And then, of course, we do have our threat experts, our hunters. We do have experts on demand, and we actually are always looking for these threats, whether it's in your enterprise or in or in the world globally. We actually identify those threats accordingly. So, John, why don't you talk a little bit about management?
Yeah, and I can chime in there too, Brett. I mean, a lot of the things that we love here at Microsoft and things we do is engage with customers to understand how they're using things. And of course, knowledge is power. And as long as customers are able to share things like, "Hey, we were attacked through this vector," those things can be provided back to Microsoft and other organizations anonymously. And so this helps us all defeat threats like that. That's why some of these threat expert services and kind of conglomeration of experts getting together in the security community helps us all fight these kind of vectors that we know are trying to intrude organizations. So we'll hop into the management and APIs. We'll kind of cover this briefly, but Microsoft Endpoint Manager is able to integrate, as Brett said, to provide you that kind of holistic endpoint protection. So you're able to not just manage your Microsoft device, or excuse me, devices, but you're able to do things like set up your application policies and manage device access. So different organizations have different requirements, whether if you want to enroll your device, if you have to enroll the whole device, or if you're able to use something like we offer through Intune, known as Mobile Application Management or MAM without enrollment. So this actually allows you to essentially have apps like SharePoint, OneDrive, Teams on the device without fully enrolling the device. And this is great for the end user, and this is something we do at Microsoft because I have a personal Outlook, a personal OneDrive, personal SharePoint accounts. And so what this allows Microsoft IT to do is wipe my device if needed, but it only wipes those areas that Microsoft controls. So my personal Outlook, my personal OneDrive, any other photos remain protected and remain owned by me. And Microsoft would essentially only wipe the content that belongs to Microsoft as the organization. So Endpoint Manager is a great centralized location to, again, be able to understand if you have devices that are weak or vulnerable or maybe patched behind, and also, again, set those app control policies.
John, we have a question from Gareth. He would like to know how we can securely roll out guest users for Teams collaboration. For example, we'd like to add guests to our tenant for Teams collab, but we cannot have the guest users listed on the user search, and they would have to be added to a team by an administrator or by fully using the guest email addresses.
Yes, this is a good question. I'm going to mentally take a note and come back to this, Gareth, when we get a little bit further in, because I want to be able to fully put together an answer here. So, Brett, I'm going to go ahead and lead you into this next part as I take a look at Gareth's question here. But of course, as I want to kind of mention what Brett said is activate Microsoft Defender for Office 365. You need to enable this across your three services of Teams, SharePoint, and OneDrive. Brett hit the nail on the head. Teams is built off of SharePoint, OneDrive, and Microsoft 365 groups. So if you don't have those holistic protections and coverages, you're not going to truly have your defense against the collaboration space. So make sure that you have these configured across the space. So Brett, we're going to go to a knowledge check, and I'm going to take a look at Gareth's question here. So why don't you kick us off with this
Yeah,
knowledge
so
check?
throughout this session, we're going to do a quick, basically, a pulse on how you guys are doing, and we're going to ask you to answer these questions in the poll so that we can keep a, make sure that we're covering the right topics for you. So that first question is, which Microsoft security includes next generation antivirus protection? Now, we didn't talk about conditional access yet as a tool, so I'm going to guess, John, that that's probably not the right answer.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think we teased that we will be talking Cloud App Security Brokers, or CASB, as folks might know it. So I don't think that that would be the answer quite yet. So I think we may have narrowed this down in our audience, racking up hundreds of votes. And it looks like people are pretty confident it might be Microsoft 365 Defender.
Yep, and we know Cloud App Security. Actually, we are going to be covering that later, so put a pin in that one. So it looks like 95% of you guys have said Microsoft 365 Defender. So apparently, we are on the right pace, and we're providing the right information for these folks. We're going to add one more question here. Question two is, which three services are part of Microsoft Defender? Is it A, and I don't want to. It's a little tough to read these all out. Microsoft Defender for Endpoint, Microsoft Defender for Identity and Cloud App Security, B, Defender for Endpoint, Conditional Access, Microsoft Cloud App Security, or C, Conditional Access, Compliance and Security, Microsoft Cloud App Security. John, why don't you take the first stab at this?
Yeah, this is another good one. So you really have to read carefully. And sometimes, if for those of you that have taken some of our certifications at Microsoft, these are common questions. You will see that you have to be pretty detailed on knowing what the kind of three portions are. So I'm going to start at the bottom, work my way up: conditional access, compliance and security, and then MCAS. Again, we haven't quite talked MCAS, but it still doesn't mean it's not a part of it.
And again, I don't think conditional access is one of these services. I believe it's part of it, but I don't believe it's the actual service. So I'm going to take C off the table.
I would agree. And then you would be able to take B because B takes conditional access in there as well. I do know that endpoint identity and MCAS seem like three pretty fundamental parts.
I believe so. I believe endpoint for Defender and Defender for Identity and Cloud App Security is the correct answer. Still waiting to hear back from our poll, but we are pretty sure you guys following along knew that already. So, John, let's talk about Cloud App Security because it's shown up in these questions a few times. Maybe you can jump into that.
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and kick us off. So what is Cloud App Security? You will hear quite a lot of acronyms if you're familiar with this space. If you're not, CAS or Cloud App Security, you'll hear CASB as we have highlighted on the screen, or in Microsoft terms, you will hear MCAS for Microsoft Cloud App Security. So a lot of acronyms that get thrown around. But what Cloud App Security or a CASB broker is able to do is provide that layer between your cloud apps and those users, and enforce things like security compliance measures to essentially enable your environment to be able to regulate all of your applications, whether they're Microsoft, other SaaS vendors, third-party LOB apps, whatever they are. You can actually enforce those same security measures on them as if they were all under one ecosystem. So again, natively integrates with leading Microsoft solutions, providing visibility into the apps being used. You can control that data where it's traveling and get the analytics on that, which is another big part, as Brett mentioned earlier, was that AI automation. Again, we want to be able to get analytics over the data in our organization and use that to make intelligence decisions on how we want to enforce things like, increase policies like conditional access. Maybe we want to increase multi-factor authentication to certain apps, et cetera. Brett, I think you have a good idea of some of this architecture for us.
Yeah, it's a simplified architecture, but let's take a look at that Cloud App Security box. Cloud Discovery is basically it's analyzing all those traffic logs against the Cloud App Security catalog that we have of more than 16,000 cloud apps and over more than 80 risk factors. And these apps are ranked and scored to provide that risk assessment report. The app connectors, they use our APIs of ours and app providers to give that visibility and control by that Cloud App Security layer. And then we do have conditional access app control, which provides that protection real time and visibility and control over access and activities within those cloud apps.
That's a great overview. Thanks, Brett. And I know it's a lot of technical terms coming out at people. But it helps set this framework. And you've probably have heard this across Microsoft Security. These aren't, I don't think, even Microsoft unique terms. But the first one starts with discovering and controlling the use of shadow IT. And Brett, what is shadow IT?
Shadow IT is pretty interesting. I love this term. It's actually also called embedded IT or fake IT or stealth IT. Think of yourselves as a big corporation. We at Microsoft, John and I are our own shadow IT. That's those IT departments that are trying to find solutions using these IT controls that the global admins are not really thinking of using. And so because of that, they're actually great tools for moving forward and being innovative, but they also open a lot of security risks and security holes.
Yeah, and I'd say we saw this shadow IT really blossom in the age of box storage, right? When we had all these different cloud providers where we wanted to share information, I might be a organization that is built off of SharePoint and OneDrive, but Brett, you were maybe using something like a Google service or Dropbox or Box, and it was everyone was sharing different links, and IT was like, we have no idea what services people are using. Again, it's not saying that people aren't being productive by what they're doing, because a lot of times, to Brett, to your point, they were, right? It was helping us be productive and get our jobs done. But the problem was, is we had data flowing in and out that IT essentially had no idea over. So I personally believe that, discovering this use of shadow IT really leads into these next three of being able to protect your sensitive information, whether it's in meetings or being done through collaboration services. detecting those cyber threats and anomalies, again, often occurring through some of our most social services, whether it's mail or attachments being shared, and then being able to control the compliance of these cloud apps. So again, that's a big part of Shadow IT is if you have applications or services that are generating content that are essentially needing to be regulated, whether it's your industry or where you are in the world, we know there's global compliance and regulatory requirements. If you don't know what's going on with this shadow IT, you are going to have a hard time enforcing compliance measures on those apps or services. So a lot of information there. We're going to move to our next knowledge check, and then I think we're ready to hop into some of the core content here. So Brett, of these examples is part of the Cloud App Security Framework?
I think all three, because they say shadow IT.
See, we did hit on shadow IT a lot, and I think that's one of the answers to everything, I feel like. But in the terms of this, let's go ahead and see. We need to assess.
I think assess the compliance of your shadow IT doesn't make any sense, because I think we are actually identifying those threats rather than assessing whether they're compliant. That's a whole nother can of worms to deal with. Identify cyber threats, letter A, in your shadow IT. That's a possibility.
Yeah, it seems like identity cyber threats, it is pretty valid.
I'm looking at the poll, and it looks like we are both wrong on the first and last one. 90% of people are saying discover and control the use of shadow IT.
They listened to our pitch on shadow IT, and let's go ahead and see what the answer is here.
Sure enough.
They're right. Before I get to conditional access and implementation, I do see a question in the box that we are going to specifically be addressing towards the end of our session. So Lai Ming mentioned, how do we control data loss or prevent users from uploading corporate data when our internal users are guests on external Teams channels? A lot of information there. Brett and I will specifically be hitting on data loss prevention towards the end of the session. Brett's actually going to show us how you can configure some policies. So Lai Ming, I will be addressing that. Brett and I will address it specifically in the kind of last quarter of our presentation here. We have a whole section on data loss prevention and protecting sensitive info. And Gareth, I have not forgotten about you. That's we'll be coming back to that as well as we talk about how to manage those guests and, more importantly, manage the content and data that are being produced by those guests. So conditional access topic. If you are unfamiliar with what conditional access is, I like to break it down to a pretty simple if-then statement. I'm essentially able to challenge you, Brett. If you don't meet these certain conditions, then you are going to have to jump through these hoops. It is breaking down in very general terms that way, but that's how we treat when devices or end users are trying to access information that our organization owns. So it's a security feature within Azure Active Directory or AAD. And again, it's bringing these signals together to make intelligent decision and being able to enforce organizational policies. Part of our zero trust model. And again, it is an if-then statement that allows us defense in depth so we can enforce the first factor authentication. And you see here on the image, this is a good example of configuring a Teams MFA policy. And so this is something, in this case, we might want to say, hey, any end user that is coming off of CorpNet or not on CorpNet needs to do MFA. In a world where we're always collaborating, probably offline, this is something that we might want to do an actual device assessment. So we know that Brett sometimes likes to travel. And if I see Brett is in a location that is not a normal IP address for Brett, we can actually then require him to do an MFA. Or if Brett decides that he's going to apply a Tor browser and mask his IP because he likes to play with MSIT, they are going to 100% enforce a MFA policy, and they might actually just block access. So this is a good example, too, with conditional access. If you meet, if a device actually meets certain security thresholds that are alarming, we could actually just prevent access in general, right? So this conditional access isn't always allowing it. We can actually prevent it if needed in the case that a major red flag is raised. Teams policies are included, and why, again, Brett and I will keep stressing this. Think of this in your overarching M365 service, because if you are an organization that has mail and file storage rolled out with Exchange and SharePoint, think of Teams as another service layer or another app layer of management. You likely have employees that want to have Teams and Outlook on their mobile devices. You can create kind of this one-stop shop policy, or if you face additional regulations or compliance obligations that you need to have treat them individually, you can create conditional access policies individually, or you can even create them based on user groups. So if you have senior level members of your organization that you fear are a little bit more prone to cyber attacks or intended breaches, you can increase the security based on user groups as well. And that's the beauty of tying into this Azure Active Directory integration. So Brett, I've talked a lot, but I think people want to see these things in action. So why don't you go ahead and take it away and show us creating a conditional access policy.
Great. So first, I want to kind of give you an overview of what our interactive guides are. These are new, something that we started creating right around when the pandemic hit, because we knew we couldn't do Ignites Live. So let's think of an interactive guide as a combination. It's a hybrid of a hands-on lab and a web click-through. These guides are available on docs.microsoft.com, and they're also included in several of the Teams Microsoft Learn modules. Now, if you want to follow along with me on this specific interactive guide around identity access management and threat protection for Teams, you can use that aka.ms/teamsecurityig for interactive guide to follow along. So let me switch over to my desktop.
Collaboration in real time. Look at that, Brett.
Great. Can you see it? Perfect. So this is not the interactive guide. This is the Teams, the MS Learn homepage. And if we go to products here and click on Teams, it'll take us to the Teams landing page for MS Learn. And if you scroll down right there in the middle, you'll see interactive videos and demos. And you can click on that and you can go and see all of our interactive guides. But let's actually flip over to that first guide that we had talked about. This is Teams Security. Let's make it a little bigger. There we go. And I'll zoom in as much as I can to help us through this. So like I said, this is a hybrid between a hands-on lab that you would do at a physical Ignite, where on the left side you have that your sandbox of your tenant. And on the right, you have that instruction set. We can change the themes to make it easier. And even more exciting is I can save that transcript and it will generate a PDF for me for me to use on my own tenant. So I can actually take this instruction set and use it later.
Yeah, that's great, Brett, because we know a lot of customers do sign up for test tenants, or they have sandbox environments, or even customers that have pre-prod environments, that if you're fortunate enough to be able to roll something out to that pre-prod, I can't recommend or agree with Brett enough downloading these guides. These are what we do in real time in IT groups. Again, you may just need to change some specifics. So I highly encourage you, download these and make sure it's in a test tenant or a test environment before you roll it out to production. But I agree with Brett. The transcript is extremely helpful.
Absolutely. And if you look at the bottom left, you can see there's a left and right arrow. It's a little small, so let me zoom it in here real quick. You can see right here on the left, you can actually, there's a audio, there's closed caption, and there's that left and right, so you can click back and forth. So you can do these as a click-through demo, or you can do it like we're going to do and actually be interactive, because these are, they're made with HTML5 and Adobe Captivate, so they're demos on Rails, so you can't go off the rails and get lost and move into other security threats. We're going to stick with what we're working on. So let me just click on this, start this interactive guide, and let me give you context for what we're going to do. We're going to do that first exercise. We're going to configure a conditional access policy that requires multi-factor authentication, or MFA, for Teams. So on the right, you can see I have the instruction set, and you'll also see that there are checkboxes here. So as I click on this first exercise, whoops, took me back to the top of it. You can see here I am in a browser, and the first thing I need to do is go to that admin security, Azure Security Center. So I'm going to click on that, and I'm going to actually type in the admin.microsoft.com and actually go to that site. And look, it did that. Now, if you're too lazy, on the right-hand side, you can see there's a box next to each of the things that they want you to type. Think of that as a copy and paste. So I'm going to click on that first one, the admin. I can go over here and just control V it, log in. I'm going to type in password. It looks like password is what I need to type. And then if I'm going to click yes, oops, I didn't follow any instructions. You can see these hint boxes do pop up. I do need to click don't show this again, then click yes. So there we go. Easy sign in. Not that exciting, but let's move on. As we hear in the Security Center, I'm going to click show all. I'm going to go to security. Whoops, sorry, Azure Active Directory. What else do we have to do? Let's follow the instructions, then go to the Azure Active Directory again. And we are going to scroll down and click on security here. So you can see it lets me click through these, and I'm not doing a left click, right click. I'm actually clicking where I need to click and typing in where I need to type in. All right, so let's see. It wants me to do a conditional access policy like we had said, and we're going to do a new policy. So I'm going to click on new policy. It wants me to type that name of that policy. And usually where names come up, I do like to do the cut and paste. So I'm going to click on Teams MFA policy. I'm going to control V that in there. Let's see if I can see that a little easier. Perfect. And then we're going to do some of those if then statements that John was talking about. The first thing we need to do is users and groups. And we want to select a specific set of users and groups. So I'm going to select users and groups. Click that. And over here, we're going to do this for our executives because those are the ones that do like to use those non-compliant devices. Executives. And when I do that, see the executives do pop up. And let me zoom back out. Looks like I need to do next. And as you can see, I'm following the instructions here. We got a few more here. Now let's go to the what are the apps or actions? Well, the app for us, of course, is Teams. So we're going to select that app. I'm going to type over here, just type Teams. You'll see Teams pops up. And select. And then we need to do that condition. So what are the conditions that we are actually working with? We're talking about MFA, so that's a sign in at risk. So if I click on here, you'll see that I do want to configure. Whoops, there we go. I do want to configure that, so I'll click yes. And then the level of this is a high-risk policy, so we're going to set that to high.
And, Brett, I'd like to chime in here real quick. And this just shows you how many different combinations you can apply here that meet your organizational standards, right? You'll see a lot of demos done by Brett and I and across security where you'll see a lot of kind of baseline implementations of this, right? High risk. We just include one app like Microsoft Teams. In organization and in your organization, you might find that you are including Teams, SharePoint, other collaboration apps that you treat under the same requirements. Doesn't mean it has to be a Microsoft app. If you are, treat it from a business requirement or compliance standard as the same as Teams and SharePoint, you can group these in. And again, it is very common to work with organizations that have dozens, I don't mean to scare anyone, but even hundreds of these conditional access policies, because if it helps your organization be secure, you can create as granular levels of these granular level policies as you need. And again, Brett, I would fear looking at MSIT's application of conditional access policies across all of our user groups.
One of the other nice things is if you are new to Teams or just implementing Teams in your organization, adding policies that include Teams is not as difficult as it would seem, because you can actually take some of these existing conditional access policies and just include Teams as well. So let's finish this off real quick, because we've now figured out the condition. We do need to then go over here and figure out who we're granting, what kind of access we are granting based on an MFA policy. So you'll see here, we definitely want to grant access, but we do only want to do it if they pass that multi-factor authentication. So we're just going to click on that, submit that. Down here at the bottom, we want to make sure that we turn this, enable this policy and turn it on. And then we hit create, and look, we've successfully completed that exercise. These are a great tool to just kind of walk yourself through this, things that you're unfamiliar with at first, and then kind of give you an idea so you can kind of figure out, well, I need to do my who, my what, what's the condition, and what am I actually doing around conditional access, similar to the statements that John was saying next. So, John, we're going to do a couple more of these a little later, but I just wanted to give you an idea of what our interactive guides do. And we have lots of these guides for Teams, not just around security. We have it around calling, direct routing, audio conferencing, meetings, the Teams Admin Center, even first line workers. And they're a great tool for training and getting skilled up on Microsoft Teams.
Absolutely. And I do want to address the question. That's why I was looking off screen here. We still have our two guest access questions. We are getting to those. Don't worry. But we have a question around what kind or level of defense is included, defense in depth is included for Microsoft 365. Hopefully Chris and Paul might have answered these, but there are some great levels of defense and baseline levels that you could take advantage of with Microsoft E3 licensing, which are things like multi-factor authentication. If you're familiar with Microsoft Secure Score, that is going to be our first recommendation to you, is please set up MFA. When we get into premium features like password protection-based automation and conditional access, we start to get into AAD Premium 1, which is an add-on license. So I do see your comment. The additional comment was around, is there an easy way to find out all of these availabilities? I would encourage you to go to, and I'm looking at it right now, azure.microsoft.com, and getting to the pricing details specifically under Active Directory. So that will give you a good breakdown of what P1 includes, what P2, and then what your free baseline implementation is. So again, being able to do things like app proxy services are going to require that AAD, P1, and P2 additional licensing. Specifically for conditional access, you do need that premium P1 add-on. Do not like to talk licensing, but I do want to make some clarification points there, that there are, again, there are some very critical baseline things that you want to take advantage of, like device registration to be able to enforce measures to understand if it's compliant, do things like multi-factor authentication. But for conditional access, it is an AAD P1 license.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention, John was saying you should always require MFA for all your users. That's our number one step for Secure Score. Other things you might want to think about are blocking legacy application or legacy authentication, blocking access by location, and even requiring a compliant device, just to name a few.
Yeah. And so, Brett, let's go ahead and hopefully folks were following along in that exercise. And we're going to ask, what security model does conditional access comply with? Is it perimeter security, zero trust security model, or role-based access control, or one of my favorite acronyms, RBAC?
I am sure it's not perimeter security. That is the only one I'm positive.
We do need perimeter security, though, virtual and physical sometimes.
That is true, but I conditional access can actually limit some of that perimeter security, or actually define some of that, but it's not the actual perimeter security.
And we could, you know, that makes an interesting point. We could have people on-prem, on the office, connected to CorpNet that we still want to apply conditional access policies to, depending on what they're accessing, right? If Brett, when you're getting into some budgetary items and submitting, you know, different purchase orders and accounting information, I think they always want to make sure you're on a secure device, don't they?
Yep, absolutely. I have several secure devices at home now. So I don't travel anymore. I don't need them all. Role-based access control, again, makes sense, but I don't believe it is. I believe we're talking about that zero trust security model that Sancho likes to talk about in his keynotes.
He does, and it seems like most of our audience was following along with that. And again, zero trust, one of the big things, if you were able to check out Vasu's keynote this morning on security, assume breach, right? These zero trust models, it's just how we have to operate in a modern world where security threats are looming everywhere.
So 64% chose security, zero trust. So it was a tougher question than the other ones. That was interesting.
I think all of those do apply. And again, if we want to be extremely safe, we're probably incorporating all those. But there's always only one answer, one right answer. And so that was a zero trust model. Okay. So Brett, I'm going to start this section. I know we have a couple of demos that you're going to do in depth for us, but I want to lead into this because this is where two of our questions originally started from too. So data and information protection in Teams. So how do we secure that data, and how do we also allow guests and outside people in our org come in? So I'm going to start with two major items that are features, functionalities that we use within Teams, and that is sensitivity labels and something called data loss prevention, or DLP. Both of these items are part of our wider Microsoft 365 security and compliance ecosystem. You may have started with DLP with Exchange. Most customers start there. But we're going to go ahead and start with sensitivity labels, which are the ability to integrate with Microsoft Information Protection and apply additional encryption or protection settings to documents. And so this was based off of Azure Rights Management Service, or Azure RMS, for those of you that have been along with this Microsoft security journey for a while. And what we're essentially able to do is apply those protections directly to the content and within that metadata. So that means whenever Brett, if he wants to download a presentation or share a document externally, even if someone were to take that and use an outside org email or something like Yahoo or Gmail, send it, even if they got that presentation, you know, sent over from Brett three times over, it's still protected. So that means if we have policies using those sensitivity labels, like you have to open it with an organizational email or maybe even an organizational email that sits within a certain user group, they wouldn't be able to access that document. So again, even as that document might spread out, if it was on a USB drive and someone accessed it, we're applying those protection settings directly to the document. And now something we're excited about is we actually opened up the sensitivity labels to integrate with when you build a new team. So for some of you may be familiar with this, when you go and create a new team, if your IT has set this up or if you are IT and you have enabled this, you can actually allow your end users as they're creating a new team to apply a sensitivity label to that team. And this is a great way to go back to Garrison and Liming's question on guest access. We can actually use these sensitivity labels to say that if you create a new team and apply the sensitivity label, guests cannot be a member of that team, right? And so this is enforcing that when you create a new team and maybe, Brett, we apply a policy like confidential or within Microsoft, we have a Microsoft internal sensitivity label we apply when creating a new team, and this automatically prevents guests from being added to the team. Again, this is a great way to ensure that corporate data is not leaking out or we don't actually accidentally have someone that shouldn't be in that policy, or excuse me, in that group. So again, sensitivity labels go across now just documents and content. We actually have that integrated within Microsoft Teams, which applies it at the group and SharePoint level. And then going into our second item for data prevention, we have data loss prevention. And this is targeted at our structured data, right? That kind of binary ones and zeros type data that we're able to identify. Credit card numbers, passports, and account numbers that we're able to use that AI and automation to identify. And DLP is going to find when these items match your policies that you create to help you meet compliance, regulatory, or other internal standards. So again, DLP is really great at finding things like, hey, you know, if Brett attempted to buy lunch for our team and share his credit card number, that is an item that is highly regulated and we should not be sharing credit card numbers over email through SharePoint or through Teams without a proper classification or encryption on that document. So in this case, when Brett tried to ping me his credit card number, we're able to identify, hey, this shouldn't be shared, and we can have that message get blocked. And then even better, we can educate Brett with a nice little policy tip that says, hey, Brett, this is considered financial data. You should not just be sharing this over Teams, right? We're not saying that corporate credit card data doesn't exist, but we want to apply, you know, the appropriate protections on that using sensitivity labels. And DLP can help you identify where you might have those sensitive information types living out in the open. So I'm going to move on to just a quick overview, because then Brett, you're actually going to create one of these DLP policies for us. So I don't want to drain this slide too much. But again, it's how we actually can identify sensitive information, not just in Teams, but across Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive, Teams, that ecosystem of collaboration. And we can prevent that accidental sharing. So again, we have very granular policies that are mapped to things like health, financial, manufacturing standards that we know most industry customers are regulated by. And you could also use DLP to look for internal sensitive information types, which, Brett, I'm going to put you on the spot and say I'd like to see that in your demo today. But before I kick it off to you, I'm going to quickly just say there's kind of three portions of a DLP policy. Where do we want to protect that content? So what containers? Is it Teams? Is it SharePoint? Is it Exchange? Is it all of them? When do we want to protect it? So we get into that condition, like conditional access uses, and then we get into what specifically action are we going to take? Are we going to block the message? Are we going to encrypt it from a document standpoint, et cetera? So again, those kind of three, where, when, how. So Brett, why don't you go ahead and take it away and kick it off with another demo here.
Absolutely. So again, if you want to follow along, you can go to This Is Our Data Loss Prevention Policies for Teams IG. For interactive guide, you can go to aka.ms/teamsdlpig. So if you want to follow along. So let me switch over. There we go. It looks like we're up now. All right. So what I want to show you one more thing that I didn't show you in the last one. Are we presenting here?
I don't see it, Brett. So
I don't either.
Do you want to try and
reshare? Try one more time. There we go.
All right, I got you.
That looks better. Okay, great. So I wanted to show you one more thing here. Up in the top right-hand corner, or inside the URL, there's a three box plus. This allows you, by the way, you do not have to be connected to do this. You can download these IGs, interactive guides, directly to your desktop. So I just wanted to give you that. This is in Edge. It will actually do it as an Edge app. So it's not, it's part of the browser infrastructure. So let me get that out of the way. All right, here we go. So this interactive guide, we're going to do three things. I'm going to click on the what is our exercise. We're going to do three of the four exercises here. The first one is we're going to take a existing DLP policy and we're going to add Teams to it. So we want to make sure that Teams is included as part of that DLP policy all up. The second, we're going to create a DLP policy from a template. And then lastly, we're actually going to create our own custom DLP policy with sensitive info types that John was talking about. So let's actually get started here. Click on. All right. So here again, we are in the Microsoft 365 Admin Center. I'm going to, there we go. We get to where we need to do. I'm going to click show all to start off here. And I am going to go into the compliance section of this interactive guide. There we go. And then we're going to go into our DLP policies. So here you can actually see we have a data loss prevention policy. So I'm going to click on data loss prevention. And here are two specific policies that we already do have, U.S. financial data and PII information. Let's add Teams to that PII policy. So I'm going to click on that policy and I'm going to click edit policy. It already has a name, so we don't need to rename it. Go next. Here is how easy it is to add Teams to an existing policy. If you look here, we have a bunch of toggles for the apps that it does affect. And we can see right here, it says Teams chat and channel messages. I am just going to turn it on. Now, I can also choose to who that DLP policy applies to by clicking on accounts. And then I can actually select an account here, and we'll call this the IT department. So I'll click on IT. Oh, look, there it is, my Contoso IT department. And I will select them as part of this turning on DLP for Teams piece. I can click next. I don't need to change any of the rules. I was just adding Teams. I do want to turn it on right away. Next. And then here I have the ability to review that policy. So let's just make sure that Teams chat and channel messages were included. Sure enough, they're right there. And it's going to turn it on after it's created. I click submit. I am done, and that's all I have to do to add Teams to an existing policy. It's pretty darn cool that you can do it that simply. Now, again, like I said, DLP policy is such an important tool. We have lots of templates. So we're going to actually create a DLP policy from a template itself. So let's create a new policy. I'm zooming in just because the type is small. I'm hoping this helps you guys see it. So we are going to create a new policy. What kind of policy? We're going to create a privacy policy. And then we can choose from all these choices here. It looks like GDPR is a good one. That's something that always seems to come up. So let's do general data protection and regulation for the EU. Then I can click next. Let's see. We already know the name of this policy. Let's make sure that Teams is on. Sure enough, that toggle button is included.
And Brett, one thing I'd add here too is you can toggle these on and off as your workloads are available. So if you're an organization that has maybe rolled out Exchange and started to use SharePoint OneDrive, but you haven't gone to Teams quite yet, or you don't need to enforce these policies with your same compliance standards on Teams yet, you can have this switched to off, or you could actually, let's say in this case, Teams was just rolled out to MS or your IT department. You could go, and Brett won't do this now, but you could actually go into that user group and then only include it. So again, you have a lot of different flexibility options here to kind of tailor these policies to your organization.
Great. So let's continue on. So Teams is selected. Here we can do is we can actually define the policy settings, or we can create or customize advanced rules. The GDPR template is pretty robust, so we don't need anything new here. So let's click next. Then we check the info we want to protect. You'll notice that we can do it with people outside my organization or people within my organization. We are sticking with the people outside my organization. We do not want this information getting out. So we click on next here. And then this is interesting, the protection access. This is a protection action, sorry. This is that ability to figure out, to set how you get those activity reports as an admin. Do I wait for, are there several that come through? And you'll see in this first box, it's detect when specific amount of sensitive infos be shared at one time. And it waits for like 10 instances before it generates a report. We are going to be a little less, a little more stringent so that we can keep track of everything that's going on. So we're just going to change that to one. And we do send that incident report and email to the admin. We send alerts if any of these rules match. And then we can restrict access, or encrypt that content in actual Microsoft 365 locations, not just Teams. Let's click next. Custom access override settings. I'm going to zoom in again here. Again, restrict access or encrypt. We are going to block everyone. This is something that we do not want getting out. There are lots of levels you can choose. You can block people outside your organization, inside your organization, block users from accessing certain content. But we are going to block everyone on this one. So let's just click on that. We are not going to let people override this. This is a you must do this. Let's see if we got anything else here. I think that's everything. We're going to click on next. And again, we do want to set this up to turn on right away after we do this. So let's turn it on. And now we can review that policy like we did last the other one. This one we know exactly what we've done. I'm not going to go too deep into that. And then we submit that policy, and that new policy is created. Just that easy. Again, so a lot of templates you can use so that you don't have to figure this out all on your own. There's a lot of helpful tools in the Microsoft 365 data loss protection service that you can choose from. Now, here's where it gets exciting. Let's do something custom. I want to create a DLP policy, and I'm Contoso, my fictitious company, and I have a project called the Mark 8. I want anything related to that Mark 8 project to be labeled sensitive and not be allowed outside my organization. How do I do that? There's two things we need to do first. First, we have to define what those sensitive info types are. Like if you say Mark 8 in a document, or you say brand new technology or some sort of form of word, you can actually set those sensitive info types, and then we can assign them to a specific policy. So let's go ahead and start this one. Again, we're in the Microsoft 365 Compliance Center. You'll see the box I need to go over here to click. Data classification, so we're going to do some sensitive info types. Up here at the top, sensitive info types. And then we're going to create a brand new info type here. So I'm going to create a brand new info type. We need to give it a name. It looks like I need to type Mark 8 Confidential. Mark 8 confidential information. See, this is on Rails. I cannot screw up. Perfect. And then I don't know what the description is, so let's go over here. And I'm going to use the copy paste for this long description, and I'm just going to paste that right in there. And we'll go to next. Now you'll see here that we have the requirements for matching elements. What are those elements? Like I said, those words like Mark 8. So we're going to add an element, and we're going to use keywords. So you can use expressions or dictionaries, but here's a list of keywords we're going to use. Again, let me zoom out so I know what those keywords are. Looks like Mark 8, architecture, implementation, and contract. Those all sound like very sensitive things I don't want getting out.
They absolutely do.
So I'm going to paste those in there. Looks like those are in there. I'm going to hit enter. The other things you can do, we don't do in this interactive guide, but you can do confidence levels. You can decide, is that confidence level, do we need a 60% level of confidence for that AI that's searching these keywords, or do I want it higher so that there are less false positives? Great. So we've now created that sensitive info type. Let's make sure that we finish this. Now, it does recommend that you do test these sensitive types before you implement them, but I know they work, so I'm just going to go ahead and turn them on. So we've now created those info types. So now we can use those info types to create that policy, that custom DLP policy. So I'm going to go over here to policies. I'm going to create another data loss prevention policy here. Great. And see, you see we did the GDPR one, but I want a brand new one. So I'm going to create a new policy. Let's see. I need to, what am I going to call this policy? Let's call it the Mark 8 Confidential Information Protection Policy. That sounds like a big mouthful.
And, but it's very clear on what it covers.
It is, and you should always make sure that your policies make sense in the description or in the name. Again, let's copy this because it's a lot of typing. There we go. See if you can see that better. There we go. Our data loss prevention policy implemented to prevent unauthorized sharing of confidential Mark 8 project information. Perfect. All right, what do we do next? We click on the next button here. Make sure that we are turned on for Teams and channel messages. There's a lot of zooming here because I can tell that the type is so small. And because we're at 1920 by 1080, I want to make sure that you can actually see what we're working on here. So I'm zooming in and out a lot.
And one thing I'll quickly add there, Brett, is Teams chat and channel messages includes private channels. That was something we announced a couple months ago that we've extended that support for DLP into private channels. So we don't explicitly say that on there, but do know that your private channels are covered.
Great. Thank you. All right, so let's click next here and let's define those policy settings. We are creating a customized advanced DLP rule, so that's great. I'm going to click next, and here we go. Now let's do that. Those statements that John was saying on how do you do this. We've now got those sensitive info types. We now have a rule that we need to create. A lot of naming. So we're going to call this Mark 8 Sensitive Content Detection. I'm going to skip the description here, and I'm going to add a condition. And this condition we add here, so let's see what I could do. Let's see, content is shared from Microsoft 365 or content contains. And here it's content contains. We're going to use those sensitive info types that we created first. So I'm just going to go here and add a sensitive info type. And because I know that it was called Mark 8 something, all I have to do is type Mark 8. And sure enough, there it is. And I can select that. Go ahead and click on add. Move to our next, scroll down here. Move to the next piece. Now, I want to jump into here. So this is use the notification to inform your users. This is the, I want them to know that they're doing this wrong or why I'm doing this. So we can do things like email notifications, or we can do policy tips that John was talking about earlier. These are great. What's great about them is you don't have to use custom policy tips that when a reader sees them don't really make sense. We can actually create a very specific policy tip that will pop up, and we're going to say this content appears to contain sensitive information. So this would make a whole lot more sense to a user if they saw this information when I tried to put a Mark 8 confidential document attached in a Teams chat to something, someone external. This would say, wait a second, this content is sensitive. You can't do this. However, we did put in this policy tip, business justification is required to override. We work with vendors all the time. There's some times where you actually do need to share sensitive information, but we want to make sure that the admin, first of all, the user doesn't do it by accident, and that the admin is aware when you do something like, no, I disagree, I have a business justification, I'm going to do this. So what I need to do then next is, I want to go, zoom in here one more time, is I want to let people who see that tip override that policy. And so I'm going to turn that on. And then I'm going to require a business justification to override. So basically, I want them to tell me why they're doing this. We'll scroll down here. And what's our next step? We need to check the incident reports. You want to set the severity level in admin. This is a medium level. This is not PII. We think this is okay. We are going to share some of this data, but we want to put it at a medium risk. That's still a good level to choose. And then we want to send that, like I said, send an alert to our admins. There's our email. Zoom out again here. We can scroll down. We've got all our policies set up now in this brand new custom policy. We can see, let's take a look at what it says. Sensitive content detection. Our conditions are met. Our actions are set. It's turned on. We are ready to go. So I'm going to click on next. We are definitely going to turn this on right away. Here's a description of it again, which we already know. And that new policy is created. Congratulations, we just created a custom DLP policy. So this guide, we did three of the four exercises in this guide, adding teams to an existing DLP policy, creating a custom DLP policy with a template like GDPR or PII. There's lots of templates to choose from. And then creating a custom DLP policy with sensitive information types and very specific policy tips to allow us to be able to better educate our users when they make mistakes, or we think they're making mistakes, and give them the ability to say, no, I take control of what I'm doing. There's a reason I need to do this. Let me do it. So that's the end of that interactive guide. So I hope you got a real good idea of how DLP works specifically for teams and DLP in general. Thank you.
Yeah, Brett, it generated quite a few questions, which is good to see a lot of people asking around how to enable guests, kind of open collaboration. So what we're going to go ahead and do is we are actively reading the questions as they come in, and they've kind of all been on the same similar topic and subject. So what we're going to do is go ahead and do a quick summary here, and then we're going to go into an open Q&A and address quite a few of these questions that we see here. So quick summary. You know, we talked about how to describe Microsoft Defender endpoint features within Teams, how security is implemented across your cloud apps using a cloud app security broker, CASB, or Microsoft Cloud App Security. Brett showed us an awesome example of creating a conditional access policy to help restrict and control access to Teams, applying or requiring multi-factor authentication if you're deemed a high sign-in risk. And then, as we mentioned, you can also apply those conditional access policies to other applications. If you have MCAS configured, you can now start to use your LOB apps and all that greatness. And then, again, Brett showed us an awesome example of not just creating a custom DLP policy for Teams, but leveraging an existing policy, enabling it for Teams protection, creating that custom DLP, and then also creating sensitive info types, which I did request Brett to do, and he did it on demand, so that shows the liveness of this show. So, Brett, thanks for showing us that sensitive info type, because that really helps organizations start to get into a little bit of that unstructured data that we know sensitivity labels helps, but you did a great example of showing how DLP can kind of break that barrier of just only looking at very structured data. You can actually apply those kind of criteria of what you want it to look for.
And down at the bottom, you'll see that link, aka.ms/learn-live-teams. That's that Teams homepage, that Teams landing page with all the content, all the MS Learn learning paths, which are overall learning training for 2 to 3, 4 hours. And then those individual modules like we're doing here, Defend Against Threats, and access to those interactive guides, access to the tech community if you have questions, and even access to what kind of exams or where can I take those exams for team certification.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Brett. And a couple quick resources that Brett had kind of mentioned from a Learn module and Learn Live perspective. We'll leave this on for just a second. But Brett, I think we're going to have to talk about guest access controls and how to help people regulate content from going in and out of their organization. Real quick, I'll let you plug in Skills Challenge.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So the Cloud Skills Ignite Challenge, this is a great thing. This, we've set up for Microsoft Teams specifically, we've set up a collection of learning paths and interactive, I'm sorry, and modules for you to go and complete. The average of these Cloud Skill Challenge collections is about 16 to 18 hours of content. But what you get in the end is an actual pass for certification. So once you've completed this, you will have a coupon to go and certify. And this is tied to the team certification, but you don't have to apply it to that specific certification. We also have M365 Cloud Skills Challenges, Azure Dynamics platform. This is all in the, if you go to the My Ignite Learning Zone link at the top of the My Ignite page, you can go here and compete in the Cloud Skills Challenge. And this will be going on for a couple weeks. So I think that's great. And then also, you want to make sure that we've restarted the Learn Live TV series. This is the ability to join us for weekly conversations, weekly things even like what we're doing that are walkthroughs of certain modules. This is stuff they'll be doing on MS Learn and Learn Live starting March 15th.
Awesome.
Great.
All right. So I'll actually use this as our last kind of exit slide, but we are going to start handling some of the questions that have come in. And I believe we might have had some of our moderators hopefully provide some insight on these too. Again, I'm looking off on the left-hand screen to read these. So I'll kind of start with some of the easy to answer ones. We had a couple questions around guest access reviews. And so if you aren't familiar, of course you want to be able to constantly look and see if there are guests in your organization that shouldn't be anymore, that may have no longer needed to be part of those teams. And you want to regularly review to perform hygiene in your organization to remove those folks. And we do offer something called Azure AD Guest Reviews. But as the question came in and mentioned, it is an Azure AD P2 premium feature. So again, it is an additional add-on feature. If you do not have this ability to use automated guest access reviews, at this time, it is a manual process. So it does require you going in and working through those stakeholders to identify, hey, is this a user? Is this user a member anymore? You can go ahead and look into some of the more detailed reporting on that user or that guest to see, you know, when they've been engaging with other teams or using SharePoint sites, et cetera. But I want to be very transparent and clear that if you are not using the Azure AD Guest Access Reviews component, it is a very manual hygiene process to go in and take a look at what your guests are doing. If they no longer need to be in there, then you will have to go through that removal process. I've seen other organizations kind of combat this manual process by creating a ticketing system. If you're able to have business champions in, let's say, your IT finance groups that are maybe the ones that are creating or approving new teams, they would be the ones that would be responsible for these kind of guest access hygiene reviews. So again, if your organization that has been able to have a good process of who can create teams, whether it's controlled or completely open, or that hybrid model of maybe business administrators or champions of business groups can create them, that's who you're going to want to leverage to perform those guest access reviews for that business group or that department. So again, long answer is a little bit complex, but the short answer is if you don't have Azure AD, that P2 premium license to use that guest access automated review, you're going to want to work through your champions and your business groups to perform these manual reviews. Another one is, what is the frequency for DLP report for admins? Can we schedule a report on an hourly basis? I'm not 100% sure as far as the manual controls, but DLP reports are a kind of an ongoing process. So again, your DLP policies are running in real time, and the expectation is that you should be monitoring those on a daily basis. So I'll have to follow up as far as the schedule report, how active they can be, or maybe Paul or Chris got to that one.
Here's one. Do we have to trust our end users to create those sensitivity labels to restrict things like guest access? Or is that something that we can set as a default for all teams that are created, and then we can remove those tags that they requested?
Great question. I see Nathan asked that one. I want to be very clear here. Your IT group or your M365 admins and your tenant are going to be the ones creating these sensitivity labels. The end users would have to apply them. And so this is actually where it's important to have some sort of wiki site training FAQ that is, as Brett alluded to, is educating end users on what these sensitivity labels are. a lot of examples that we do in demos like this, or that you'll see across Microsoft, we use things like confidential, highly confidential. As Brett alluded to, these are not very end user friendly terms. You want to be a little bit more clear. So I love that in his example, Brett talked about using like Mark 8 confidential. We use Project Cortana a lot internally as an example for this, right? You want to have relatable things. So you can drive those through your training sites. You can create little end user training videos or snippets of, hey, this is what that sensitivity label applies. And then you can also create those in-depth policies on the back end, like Brett showed us, where it's actually looking for those subject names too. And then to get into the second point, as far as once someone has applied a sensitivity label to a team, only the team owner can remove that sensitivity label or change it. So if I added Brett as a co-owner of the team, he would be able to do that as well. What we're looking to do in the future is again, similar with sensitivity labels, where if you declassify something, you have to provide a business justification. You'll see some of those same similar controls show up for when you're creating a sensitivity label for a team. But to your question, original question, Nathan, is you do have to create these from that IT level. And then by a default, at this time, a sensitivity label has to be enabled by IT. And then your user can create it by default. Every team will not have a sensitivity or privacy label applied. All right, going through a couple more. I still have Liming's two questions that I will get to. I see Petri asked, if the team is marked as confidential, can I still have third-party applications applied to that or having external webhooks? Yes, you can. And this is a good question. And this all regards to how you're configuring some of your other conditional access, cloud app security products, what they're enforcing. As far as a sensitivity label, that sensitivity label is going to control things like who can be a member of your team, like guest access controls, and even as far as it goes into content. And I want to be very clear on this because it's a point of differentiation. Anything that's in that content, you need to ensure, as Brett alluded to, you have that same sensitivity label and security policies applied to SharePoint and those groups, containers, or OneDrive, right? So as data moves, it's very easy to apply it to those additional locations, simple checkboxes. But if your policy ends in Teams and you don't have it enabled for SharePoint, it's not just going to break, but essentially you want to have that kind of existing coverage across. And the reason why we actually do this from Microsoft's standpoint is because we don't want to make decisions based on organization. We want to provide you the tools and the equipment to make security and compliance obligations easier. But from a default on to coverage across different services, there are times that you might not want to have a sensitivity label applied to a certain service based on compliance or industry requirements, and you have to enable those on your own. So we do get this question a lot. Why doesn't Microsoft have more default on policies or more kind of standard policy set? It's because we want to be the provider of controls and the toolbox, and we want to allow people like Brett as IT admin of Contoso to say, yes, these are tools that I need to apply, and these are other ones that I want to leave behind. So again, the sensitivity label is not going to restrict your application or webhooks, but that's something that you would apply through like your CASB or additional AAD properties. So I do have to get to Liming. Sorry, Brett. I know I'm taking some of this airtime here. But so his first question, how do we control data loss prevention from users uploading corporate data when they are external users of other organizations? And this is where sensitivity labels applies, right? We want to protect the content. So on behalf, if Brett decides to work with a vendor and share, something, whether it's content or a chat message that is sensitive information, at this time, we do not have the ability as my organization to prevent him from doing that. So what we want to do is we want to apply protection and encryption using sensitivity labels to any type of content that Brett is working in across from SharePoint all the way down. So if he does share out a document, it will have that protection applied. Now, at this time, we can't prevent Brett from manually typing out his credit card to someone else. Well, DLP will look for that. But again, this is the way we want to apply those sensitivity labels to all of your documents. And to follow up with that is, will sensitivity labeling block internal users from sharing corporate data as a guest to external sites? Yes, this is where those sensitivity labels are going to stay with that content in the metadata. So as long as Brett encrypted a document that was, Project Cortana top secret design, if he applied that content protection to it, no matter how he shares that out, or if I take it out and I say, you know what, I'm leaving the company, I'm going rogue, and I'm going to build Project Cortana. As soon as I leave the company and I try and open it with my at Outlook email and no longer my Contoso email, I actually won't be able to, right? And so that's, again, some enhanced protections that we say, you know, assume breach, that zero trust model is saying we have to have the protection of Rome with the document. Sorry, Brad, I keep putting you on the spot that you're trying
That's
to
That's okay. You're doing a great job. I'm a little out of breath with all those demos.
Yeah.
You had a chance to address that last question from Gareth?
Yes. So, Gareth, sorry to make you wait because you were, I believe, one of the first questions, but around guest access control. So we do have a great article that I would highly encourage you to take a look at around guest user access. But you can restrict only admins to add guests. And again, these are some of the controls that we leave up to the organization to determine whether guests can add other guests, whether standard users can, or whether only administrators. These are up to you as the organization. So Microsoft is a very open collab organization, as Brett mentioned, but we have plenty of customers, even in very, very large organizations, that use a very controlled and rigorous process that says, Brett, if you want to add a guest member to a team or even create a new team, you need to submit a ticket up and someone will approve that and pass it on. And that's when I talked about that kind of guest access review. That's where we use those champions and creators. So again, you can leave that decision up to the organization. And I do highly encourage you to at least open up and start with maybe only allowing administrators or other standard users to approve guests. It is always a little bit of a concern when guests can add other guests if you don't have those kind of hardening security posture processes in place. So again, it's up to you as the organization to set those standards. And the part two of that was around adding guests and not having their guest users populated. This is something that as of today will be populated. It's something we take a look at from a privacy review perspective. What type of metadata or account information can we obfuscate? Right now, again, if someone is a guest in your organization, they live in that Azure Active Directory as a guest. So they are currently, I believe, searchable. That is a good piece of feedback to maybe figure out a way if we can prevent or obfuscate who those guest users are. A tip to do help with this is if you have Azure AD guest access reviews or you perform those manual hygiene reviews, we can eliminate how many guest names are populating. But again, at this time, if they are a living guest in your Azure Active Directory, they will be a searchable identity or attribute.
Great. And I just want to say with that, I believe we are done. And at time, I want to thank you, John. You are definitely a security expert and I'm just here for the ride. It was very fun. And we hope you guys check this. This will be replayed on demand. And there are other sessions we encourage you to check out. So thank you very much. Have a great time. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.